You're listening to another episode of the Zag Exosobe here. Excited to be joined by Constance Lowell from the 2019 LC Houston chapter. Always great to catch up with folks in Texas. Thanks so much for tuning in. Let's get to it. All right, Constance, we're actually coming up on the LC application deadline. We're recording this just a couple of days before new applicants can turn in their materials. What do you remember about 2019, or I guess late 2018, when you were thinking about doing NLC? What was going on in your life then?
Yeah, it's really interesting that you asked that, because I've always known about NLC back when I was living in Chicago and organizing there before I moved to Houston. I had seen who was the makeup of NLC in Chicago. I knew that it was really cool, progressive-minded people. And then I thought, wow, there's chapters all over the U.S. So essentially, wherever I go, which ended up being Houston, there would be really cool, like-minded folks who want to make changes in their city. And so when I was living out in Houston, organizing on the ground, I knew that I wanted to meet more people who wanted to see those changes in Houston, which is just ripe for so much potential, so many progressive changes. And so I applied, and it's a truly wonderful group of people. And so I do want to give special shout outs to Chris Hollins from our class, who is running for city controller of Houston, Mario Castillo, who's running for city council member of District H in Houston, Jessica White, who's out doing amazing immigration work as an attorney in Tucson, Arizona. And there's just so many other folks working with local government, working with schools, doing a lot of great work.
That's what I was going to ask, because, you know, classes are pretty diverse. There's definitely people who are interested in politics and running for office, but there's a bunch of other kind of cross-sector folks in the cohorts as well. Who do you remember was in the class with you? What kind of fields were they representing?
Yeah, so in our class, we had a really interesting mix, truly diverse. And I know it's cliche for folks who are familiar with how things are in Houston, and even dear Mayor Turner is known for saying this. But the diversity and the spirit and the soul of Houston, I truly believe, were represented in our class. And so, and I've heard that with other classes as well previously, and then ones that followed ours. And so there were folks working with the local school system, working with different groups wanting to improve existing conditions, fighting for justice. I was a community organizer working on a lot of different campaigns impacting immigrants and impacting low to moderate income communities of Houston. And so it's a really interesting group of people who are really going the extra mile. I mean, we wouldn't have been meeting on weekends and engaging in deep, thoughtful discussions about our communities if we weren't already engaged. And there is a running joke, at least within our cohort, that when you're part of NLC, you have pre-approved friends with the different values that are on board, that you know are doing great work. And truly, like, all of those minds in one room was powerful.
Well, I'd love to talk a little bit about your work. You know, you mentioned, and when you reached out to me, that you do work in language justice and a language justice advocate. And it wasn't really a phrase I'd heard very frequently. I'd love to hear your definition of it and how you describe what you do.
So with language justice, it is a next level compared to what might be more frequently understood, which is language access. So, of course, language access, as we understand it, building off of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, making sure that folks can adequately access programs, services. And typically, this is defined for a group of people. I'm using the federal government's terms, people who are limited English proficiency. Of course, within a language justice setting, we see that differently. Some terms that are more frequently used are English language learner or people who speak other languages, especially non-dominant languages within the U.S. And so I have a really personal tie to language justice. I, growing up, didn't know what that was. I didn't even know what community organizing was, but I did see and witness a lot of violence directed towards my family based on how we appeared, our nationality, origin, were from China originally, while I'm the only American-born person in our entire family. And this violence was also based on the languages that we spoke and how even within English, the kind of English that we were speaking. And so growing up, I connected more dots together and I understood more and more how language is extremely policed within the US, even though there's not an official language, how English is extremely dominant to the point where people who are speaking other languages are penalized, criminalized, discriminated against. And I know that there's tons of people who are impacted by this every day. And so that's what fueled my language justice work. I did a lot of that in Chicago and in Houston without even necessarily realizing it. And in my current role as the Director of Language Justice Partnerships at Tecolot, which is a collective focused on design justice, language justice, and so much more, it's been a real privilege for me to grow and to learn from a group of people who are like-minded and tied within these values of advancing language justice, of knowing that English is not the only language of knowledge and power, that it's so much more, and that you are valid and you are a source of valuable information, especially when you have different lived experiences. And so through this work, I've been able to really grow my relationship not only with the city of Houston and honor that relationship and all of the wonderful people who live within it and contribute to it and give it soul and power, but also connect with language justice advocates and activists on all of the coasts here in the Midwest where I currently reside. It's been truly special. And so for those who don't know, Tecolot, we work with a lot of different clients who are interested in our services, of course. And I myself, I work with our interpreter division, working with interpreters on all of the coasts, all throughout the US, both virtually, in person. Our team is on it.
When we come back with Constance, we'll talk a little bit more about her language justice advocacy work. Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of The Zag. We'll be right back. Constance, I was curious how you were interpreting or analyzing what are the language realities of the politics that are going on right now, right? So much of, I think, what the conservative movement and the GOP is interested in doing is attacking your work in some ways, the justice of language or the accuracy of language, whether it comes to pronouns or whether it comes to descriptions of groups, or kind of to your point about how language can be used to take back power when it's been taken away from folks for some many, many years. How are you processing all the kind of political realities of the work that you do?
It's really multifaceted. On a personal level, it can be really challenging witnessing and hearing about and hearing from not only the news, but people in your own life, people in my life, about how their rights are being violated, how they're not being respected, how they can't live just a normal life like anyone else with dignity and have adequate access to housing and good wages and a good job. And so in this, I do find a lot of inspiration and power from my peers and also the people that I work with, the people that I see and the struggles that I see, not only in my current role at Tecolot, but also as an interpreter here within the Chicago region. And so I think there is a lot of movement and a lot of opportunity for folks to be involved. And so I truly believe that this starts from conversations had within families. Young people and youth definitely have rich perspectives within language justice, but then within the larger justice movement, there is truly a spot for student voice and opportunities there. And so I think there's a lot of intergenerational conversations that need to be had. I think for those who are listening, I did also wanted to offer some tangible and feasible tips on how they can incorporate language justice into their everyday lives. Mm. And then this, I think, also ties to a lot of the values that NLC holds and hopes to hold within all of our alumni and current fellows. So with that, I think there is a larger movement for folks who are aligned to not be bystanders and to intervene when they see, actively witness instances of injustice happening around them. And I think it does start from having conversations with your neighbors, with people in your lives that may not be on the same page, but having conversations, hearing their sides, including them into the conversation so that they are not more isolated, so that they are not becoming more and more radicalized in beliefs that are inherently rooted in hate and hurt. And so I think it involves that active bystander intervention, feeling threatened by folks who are speaking in different languages around us. These start with jokes, you know, they must be talking about us, you know, if they're talking in other languages. It starts with jokes, it evolves into attitudes, it evolves into fear and hatred, which ultimately results in anti-legislation, policies that hurt and harm our communities. So I think those are active tips that folks can do. I also encourage myself involved for folks to learn and to have conversations with their neighbors, even if there are linguistic barriers, even if there are cultural barriers. I think there's a large opportunity for neighbors to stand together and to protect each other, I think, is something that we need for our families, for our kids, for grandkids, for everyone.
Well said. Well, thanks so much for coming on. Thanks so much for sharing more of your story. And we'll put some of the resources that were mentioned here in the episode description. Make sure to check that out. And make sure you follow us all the places you get your podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, all the places. And make sure if you are interested in applying to NLC, you take care of getting your app in before the deadline, which right now is September 13th at 10 a.m. Eastern time. If you have any questions, you can, of course, reach out to us through Instagram. It's probably the best way to do that, at the Zag Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. And until next time, we'll catch you soon.